Brandon.
Hey, Alan.
And welcome to Dice Over Everything.
So we are currently apart, but since the weather is nice outside, we actually went outside and played games, which works pretty well this time of year. It's fall.
Yeah, it was actually really nice. In fact, because the weather was a little bit cooler during the afternoon, the weather was almost better for playing games because we didn't like boil alive in the sun.
Yes, we're in Canada for those who don't know where we're located, and we're too close to the equator apparently.
Yeah, so but it was actually great. Like I think we've talked about this before, just the weather and having the breeze out there almost made it like it was almost an optimal way to play, as long as you're in an area like there's not too much wind, right?
Yeah, only a bit of our terrain was blowing over. Just the big billboards were going down.
Oh yeah. Okay. On the table that I was playing at, it was fine because nothing was paper basically, so it was great.
Oh no, the billboards fell on your models. You just didn't notice. I put them back.
Oh okay. Okay. Oh yeah, we did play a game afterwards. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a great thing to do. Like I said, like we said before, if you are, I guess, itching to play a game in this COVID lockdown related time, do the whole like outside thing, right? You can, you know, the board is big enough that you're generally socially distanced. You can wear a mask. The weather's nice. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's like having a picnic, but for nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
So the game we were playing, though, was Infinity Code 1, which we'd given one shot before. But well, we played twice because it's so quick to play. The previous time we played, we got two games in. Then we got another two games in an afternoon with a few people getting together.
Yeah, we had a barbecue the first time. And this time we ordered in some pizza and wings.
Yeah, so it's a nice, easy game.
It really was a nerd picnic. It was great.
Exactly. And yeah, the game's not as demanding as like Infinity either. So you feel like you can sort of hang out, play a bit, then take a break, come back, play another game. And it's not exhausting you like possibly playing. Sometimes once you play one game of Infinity, you're like, all right, that's enough for me. I've stressed my brain enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, so, you know, it was the, I guess you could call it a nerd picnic or nerd barbecue. So we're also, sipping a little bit of the alcohol, which makes everything more relaxing as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's probably
and I think part of what helped is our group, right? The group that was playing, obviously because of the social distancing, we didn't get like the entire huge group all at once. It was just four guys in a relatively large backyard, two tables.
Yeah, so I mean, we're lucky enough to have terrain, but. I was thinking of
and a backyard people. To go and play in.
Yeah, those are a whole bunch of things that not everybody has. That I would say actually most people we hang around with in our gaming group don't have, so we count ourselves as fortunate as being able to keep all that stuff. So, but once you, like with Code 1 though, I guess the benefit is the table is not as large compared to Infinity, the normal game. Well, it depends on what size game you decide to play at, which depending on the point size, unlike the regular version of Infinity, the board size changes as well, which maybe I hope to even see with N4, that if you decide to play smaller games in the full version, it would be nice if the board shrunk, but I somehow doubt that'll happen. But a big benefit of that, as I said, is that it's difficult to acquire all the terrain you want for Infinity to play, like have a really good board that's suited for Infinity. And that just the fact that the board gets reduced to from the typical 4x4 down to 32x4 feet, it's really good for like, minimizing the amount of terrain you need. That they now sell those terrain packs, and getting a few of those terrain packs, it's now possible to cover a board that size.
Yeah. So if anyone's wondering, today we're talking all about Infinity Code 1 and our experiences having played outside in the beautiful weather. So Code 1 basically is this newly released beginner-friendly version of Infinity, one of our favorite games. It's a sci-fi setting, and there are so many things that are really helping it sell to or make it easy to get into the game.
Yeah, because I think I've talked on previous podcasts where we brought up Infinity about getting new players into the game. And for those that aren't into a super hardcore game, which honestly isn't most of gamers, and the game maker, Corvus Belli, does know that. They've mentioned it a few times. But just with more casual gaming groups, they found it really difficult to pick up all the rules.
Yeah.
So I think it would have been really good.
N4 is like a great, or Infinity in general, is a great super deep kind of game. But the rule set, the kind of idea behind the rule set was to model whatever you want to do whatever you think you could do it conceivably in a battle between two covert ops teams, you can basically do in Infinity. But what that means is if you've got to model all these things, is you have tons of rules, right?
Yep.
And so the complication gets huge, and you have an issue with a lot of these miniature games. One of the hard selling points is for someone who's, let's say, a nerd but more into board games, is the amount of setup cost and initial investment to get into the game before you can actually start playing. And I think Code One.
Good thing about Infinity and Code One is that it doesn't require too many models. So on that front, the barrier to entry is pretty low, but realistically, like learning the game and learning like what a lot of units do to feel sort of competent in it, it's one of the biggest like hurdles to get over, I would say.
Yeah, and having a table full of terrain. Yes. So like when you talk to someone new, right? So just to give a general kind of overview, Infinity requires 15 models. Basically 15 models, or 10 to 15 models on each side, and then a 4-foot by 4-foot table filled with a lot of terrain, right? So when people, when you're trying to sell this to people, like, say, hey, why don't you come in and you know, try out Infinity if they're into playing miniatures games, one of the problems is even though 15 miniatures doesn't sound like, or 10 to 15 miniatures doesn't seem like a lot, just filling that table with terrain becomes a huge barrier for someone. Now, if they're joining your group, you can have the terrain and they don't have to get it. So then they just need the 10 to 15 models. But if you're a new group and you're like brand new to miniature gaming and you have no one else who's playing and you're trying to like get in with your friend, having that table full of terrain, which is critical, honestly, for the enjoyment and experience of the game, to make everything look pretty and awesome, like to have that true experience, is actually a lot of work. It is the biggest thing.
Yeah, and the cost, I would say, is possibly even more than like the starting cost to get the table on the board versus the starting cost to get the miniatures on the board. Like the terrain is probably more money.
It can be if you're not building it yourself, right? So you're either spending a lot of time or a lot of money, right? Like when you're talking about getting into the game, Infinity, even the base version of Infinity, they would sell boxes where you can get two armies that can oppose each other for like $150.
Yeah, Canadian. Right? So even less American. Yep.
Yeah. So, So that's relatively affordable to get into the like with the miniatures. The problem is then you have to build this terrain, like a full board of terrain, which is like more than 9 buildings. Right. You need. If you think about like a miniature guy's like 28mm, like 9 buildings, it's a lot of buildings, right?
Yeah, and then you probably want maybe a dozen crate size things. They could be cars, they could be trucks, billboards, but maybe even more than a dozen of things like that.
Yeah. And one of the good things about the Infinity starter boxes is they would come with the crates, right? Which was a great idea, except that then had quite a decent number of crates on a box. The problem is you're missing the buildings. And then if you go and buy the MDF stuff, that's like, like you said, right? That's a lot more money.
Yep. But it is much better. Like the paper buildings they previously released were sort of flimsy. But
So what happened with Code One, though? I guess we should talk about the switchover, and it actually happened a little bit earlier than Code One, but Code One also has a starter pack. And because Code One, of the way that the game is set up, you're basically, each side is going to have 10 miniatures. So the number is actually reduced because, you know, in the normal Infinity, it's 10 to 15 now, right? But now in the new, in Code 1, which is the simple version, it's basically a flat 10, right? Everyone just takes 10, right?
You could take less, but it doesn't, it's not very good. You're compromising the list if you take less.
Yeah, so then it becomes a lot easier, I think, for people to think about how to build their list. They're like, okay, I just need to get to 10, get the 10 models and get to 10, right? It's just easier to think about. And then on top of that,
the whole selection of models is also smaller since instead of the, I think it's 9 factions, which have different sub-factions within them, it's now just reduced to 4.
And the selection of units is a lot more reduced, right? And to make it easy for people to get in, basically they've released like models, right? Like sets to get in. And so the starter set for Code 1, I think, is a really good starter set because it doesn't come quite with the full amount of models. So, but it comes with the majority of the models you'd want to play for what we believe is a full game, right? But it also comes with cardboard, a hefty kind of terrain pack, right, on top. So it's a little bit more expensive than just the miniatures, but it comes with a box of terrain and tokens. So it basically has almost everything you need to, a lot of what you need to get going, right? It's a good starter pack and you can kind of play some intro games. And then you just need to fill things in with a little bit more to complete your set of models. And so because it comes with those buildings, like we're talking about, right, it's a lot easier to get into the game. And I believe, the building stuff is relatively cheap for the amount, I guess, that you get.
Yes, you'd say it gives you, well, maybe if you're playing a mid-size game, which we'll talk about the sizes of games later, but for a mid-size game, which is 25 points, If that terrain that comes with the pack would give you about a third of a table of terrain.
I think it's
four buildings.
Probably a little bit more than a third. Mm-hmm. I think you could get away with 2 packs of it, honestly, but it would be a little bit sparse.
It'd be nice to have 3 packs, basically, of it.
More than enough. The thing is, 3 packs is more than enough for a normal size game. So it's somewhere in between 2 and 3. And I'd say it leans more to just like almost 50% of what you need. I'd say it's around 40%, 40, 45 maybe.
Yep, so you could get something else other than the terrain packs they specifically put out at some point. So that's just how far it gets you.
Yeah, so I found the starter packs really good intro to the game. They're much more balanced, the starter pack. It's called Operation Coldstrom. Mm-hmm. I feel like the lists that they give you are much more balanced than the N4 starter packs that they had.
Yeah, the N4 starter packs have more to do with creating link teams, which don't exist in this version of the game. So, and they have more to do with putting in specific weapons to fill certain slots. It's less about that in Code 1.
Yeah, I feel like Corvus Belli really spent a lot of time on crafting these starter packs, like the Coldstrom stuff, to make it easy for people to sub in, like to buy those, like if they're totally brand new, right? Get them, get with a friend, split the box, and start playing. I think it's a great pack.
Yeah, having 2 armies in 1 box is always good because, you know, if you buy it and you want to get a friend into it, you can paint both sides. You're not going out and trying to buy all sorts of stuff here and there to create 2 armies. So it's a good start.
And another thing that helps is that, you know, why would you get into it? Well, the models are freaking beautiful, right? That's basically what got us into the original Infinity of the game, and it's just getting better with Code 1.
Yeah, it's a very tactical game. It doesn't have the Rochambeau feel of basically kicking each other or basically going and punching each other in the face, alternating. Mm. Like a lot of other war games do, because it has, every time you fight, it gives your opponent usually an option to fight back if they're watching you. Mm-hmm. So it feels like you're having a real firefight as opposed to just like subtracting from their force on your turn and they subtract from your force on your turn. It feels like you're having a back and forth battle with 1 miniature on 1 miniature.
Yeah, it feels like they're resisting as opposed to a lot of the other games where you just like you shoot, you unload your clips, and then if they're still alive, they unload their clip of guns, and then you're on to the next turn, right?
Yeah, so. It feels like having the retarded boxing match of you just alternate punching each other in the face until one person falls over.
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously we love this game. We've loved Infinity for a really long time. So why don't and this starter version is great. We've talked about, you know, how the actual packages that you can get in the game are really good. What about the specifics about this kind of with our experience of having played a few games, what are the really good selling points of Code One? Besides, you know, what we just talked about with those kind of things. Or yeah, what sold you and what did you really like about them?
Oh, I like the complexity of the full version of the game. So I don't know if I'm really the target audience of it. Mm-hmm. But I think some of the tweaks I can more talk about from the full version of the game to Code One, because the full version mm-hmm. of the game has hacking, which gets to be quite mm-hmm. complicated. And I would say maybe it didn't need to be, that now you have ways of sort of manipulating, basically giving out attacks as things are approaching mm-hmm. you using hacking.
Yeah.
Certain units have hacking that are much more, it's more versatile almost, even though there's fewer programs. So you're not thinking about it as much.
So
it feels like just having simpler and more universally applicable hacking programs.
Yeah, I feel like what they did was that N3 was like we were talking about before, kind of like a sprawling, huge rule set where you can do whatever you want. Whereas Code One, it basically feels like they tried to cut away everything that they felt was not essential to the core of the game required to get the entire general feeling of the game, right? So originally they used to have, or in the N3, and I assume in N4, they had like four different hacking devices, each with a ton of different programs. A lot of these programs were very, very marginal. Like if this very, like, I don't know, 1% chance of happening a game thing happens, then you're going to use this program.
Right. Yeah, once you have a couple hacking devices, you have about 2/3 of a sheet of paper with information on these hacking programs. So, mm-hmm. and it sort of works the same way with there being more abilities throughout the rest of the game. That a lot of Infinity, you've got to think about very corner cases going on to get the win.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when it comes to Code, all of those like multitude of things that are in there are now not there. So it leaves you to concentrate more on the tactics. Like your board positioning.
Yeah, the main tactics and everything like that. And they left in enough of the, in my opinion at least, enough of the interesting things to like they still have hacking, right? But they basically limited it down to two programs that are useful and basically that make a hacker useful in all kind of situations, right?
Yeah, so one of the programs is make it easier to target something. And then target anything, and then the other programs are anything that's sort of robotic or has like power armor. It might shut super that tough. Down.
Yeah, they can stop them from acting. So with mm-hmm. these two different kind of things, even though they didn't have all the different types of hacking programs they had before, those two mean that in most situations, a hacker is a valuable tool and it does something unique and interesting, right? And I feel like that's kind of what they tried to do with all of the weapons and the different types of weapons and different types of units. They kind of pared it down to the quintessential, like iconic abilities, units, or spells, hacking, that are required to get that feeling of the game. And I think if people have been listening to us, we have also kind of been like, this is kind of, I don't know, an important kind of thought in our evolution of gaming, like in the game that we're working on, the entire idea is to pare a miniature game down to as little as possible, right? And I feel like Code One has done a lot of that. And in fact, one of my criticisms is that in some ways, I feel like they could have gone farther, right?
Yeah, there's a few things that probably could have disappeared and the game still would have worked.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then you, so that when you're playing it, you still get all of the feelings of Code One, of Infinity, without as much of the extra rules and the extra kind of, like, you know, it's crunchiness, right? And I'm not like totally against crunchiness, but I feel like a lot of the times you don't need the crunchiness, like the super complicated edge cases, for just as much strategy. Like, crunchiness doesn't necessarily add strategy or ability or whatever, right?
Nope.
It can often even distract from the game, because people are too busy just remembering rules as opposed to being in the moment, playing the game, and thinking about the overall arching, like, way that you play and strategy. So
yeah, it does help to make things feel not repetitive. Like, mm-hmm. some, you might have the same situation in multiple games, but because of the sort of extra rules that are in there, now the game can take a lot of different directions. But for a game you don't play all that often, like, you don't need all that extra, those extra corner case rules.
Yeah, that's true. And and again, this goes back into, like, Infinity as, like, an intro game to other people, right? If a new person, let's say they generally play Warhammer 40,000 or Frostgrave or, I don't know, Flames of War, right? When you go and play Infinity, you don't necessarily need to switch things up all the time with small tweaks just to keep things interesting. You just need, like, a base set of rules to get that feeling of Infinity, right? Where that firefight, right? That heroic kind of pushing, going through, in ramboing, right? The ability to rambo through the thing, and then the firefight of defending and all that kind of stuff. That's, and that cinematic kind of feel. That's what makes Infinity so interesting and different from other games. And I feel like they've kind of captured that by reducing a lot of this extra stuff, right?
Yep.
And I feel like, especially if you're a new person, you're not going to miss all, like, because you've never even seen the stuff that's missing, you're not going to miss it.
Right? No, the book is already full of rules. So it's not.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. The book is not short. Like, they pared the game down, but even like, yeah, even pared down to what they did, that book is actually really in depth. Right, and if you're playing Infinity like once a month, it's honestly more than enough to, and more than enough stuff in that book to keep you basically occupied forever, right? If you only play it once a month.
Oh yeah, the games will all feel different even if you play it for like 2 years once a month with the same faction
or whatever, maybe even, right? Yeah, well, maybe not with the same faction, but you know, they are releasing new factions. Well, they're planning to release, I think it's like 4 new factions a year until they have, what, all the main factions, which is, I think, 10?
Yeah, so that is one of the big downsides, like, I saw with Code 1 versus the full game. That a lot of what people get, that gets people into Infinity, is the look of the models. Yeah. And I often tell people, like, if you like the look of the army, just go for it, as long as you don't hate the play style, which now that they've reduced the number of models you can take in each army, it's going to bring the playstyles much closer together, since, like, what, you can't spam units anymore, which some of the armies that would have crappier but higher model count, it's now less.
I feel it's almost the opposite.
Yeah. So you think now there's less stuff in Code 1?
Yeah.
That the factions are forced to be more different because not everybody doesn't have,
yep,
like 50 units each.
Or more. Exactly. Right. So I think one of the problems with Infinity is that it's been 10, 15 years old. So what has happened is that as they've added miniatures or units to each faction, the ability for a faction to do, they fill in all the gaps. And the thing that makes a faction unique and identifiable, well, number one is like the look, right? In my opinion.
I'm on the same page.
Yeah. So, and then the second thing is they have to have both strengths and weaknesses. But if every faction has enough models to cover every strength and every weakness, they become more samey. Whereas in Code 1, because they've limited it to a much smaller subset of models, I think the ability to keep the weaknesses of every army and also have the strengths of that army be solely the domain of that army is going to be more likely.
Yeah. So do we want to talk about the strengths of each army at this point, like briefly? Because the current four factions are Yujing, sure. Pano, O-12, and it's called Combined, but really it's all Shazvasti models, which are space frogs. I find the two most similar ones are probably the ones that come in the Coldstrom, which are the orange Yujing and the blue Pano, because they're both like fairly tough armored factions with like, pretty heavy firepower on their big guys. But how would you say you differentiate them? Because I would say they're the two
closest
factions.
So this is one of those things that I actually found interesting in their choice of factions, because if you look at the overall factions in Infinity. They're quite different, but because they have so many factions, some of them are actually similar, right? And I do feel like the four factions they chose are actually some of, like, almost the most similar factions in the game.
Well, the Combined / Shazvasti, I would say, is fairly different than the other three.
No, I wouldn't say so.
No?
So, not, well, yes, compared to, okay, so there's four factions we said, right? So Pano and Yujing are the most similar to each other, but if you were to compare Combined and Pano versus Combined and let's say Nomads or Hack or Ariadna, I think Combined plays, even though they look different, they actually play more similarly to Pano and Yujing than they do to Nomads or Hack or Ariadna.
Yeah, so maybe they were afraid that the other factions wouldn't work as well because they're more based around higher model counts, and they wanted to wait to release some new models.
Maybe that's literally part of the reason why they did do it, is that these four factions, they're like, for us, we come from the Infinity, like the old Infinity game, so these we are like. We kind of have accepted the huge differences in those factions, but maybe to them as an introductory product, it makes sense to choose four factions that are not like super different, but different enough. And especially, you know, like in terms of different enough to that you can basically anyone can get into every faction and it's not too complicated. You're not trying to like learn an entirely different faction. If one person chooses Hack and one person chooses, let's say Pano, the way those two guys are going to play is going to be really different. Whereas, right, so then the ability for, let's say, your friend who's getting into the game to help you with tactics or kind of understand what you're doing is going to be much harder, right? Then if, and even to play against a Pano player versus a Hack player is going to be much different than if you have four factions that are a little bit more similar, so that when you play against another faction, it's not going to be like, oh my God, I've played like against Pano three times. Now I'm playing against Combined. I don't know. Like, or now I'm playing against Ariadna, I don't know how to fight them. Whereas if I played three times against Pano and now I'm playing against Combined, it's a little bit less harsh to deal with the things that they're throwing at you.
Yeah, your knowledge is more, your knowledge spans applicable. Across the armies a bit more. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, let's talk about the actual armies.
Okay. So Yujing and Pano both bring pretty good, like, heavy models with a fair bit of armor, so they can take a lot of shots. Yeah. But I would say that a big defining feature of Code 1 that I found different from Infinity, which I think is one way the armies differentiate, is that you want more, because there's less defensive abilities with there being fewer rules on the board, like a lot of rules in the full version of Infinity give you defensive tech, whereas when those don't exist in Code 1, you now have to rely on some different things to defend yourself, and it means that attack pieces that are, say, really fast or are just really survivable, they have lots of wounds, they can take lots of hits, so they can get across the board and kill a few things before they're taken down in response. But those become more important, so those are more of a, I would say they're more of a defining feature of the armies, because you're going to need those, you're going to want those pieces.
Okay, so you're talking about in general the armies, how they play.
Yes, and I think a lot of how they play is based around their major offensive pieces.
I think that's always been though. Like, I guess it's not exactly always been. It's when you play 10-man lists, you're right. When it in because of the gameplay, right? Because you're playing, everyone plays a 10-man list. You play in the 10-man list style, which means that you're going to your attack pieces and your defending pieces, they have to be like robust in and of themselves. And so that is an important thing. That's in general one of the fun things about Infinity is that, you know, you have, we talked about this before, Rambo pieces, right? And the ability for Rambo guy to kind of like push into your enemy is great, right?
Yeah, whether it means maybe they have speed so you don't have to spend so many activations getting up there.
Mm-hmm. Or they start up the board because they're infiltrating, right? That's a big deal to have that when you only have 10 orders, right? To go and move in. And so, yes. But in terms of the actual armies, I think all of the armies have decent, like you would say, attack pieces, right? And this is kind of the thing where you could say because all of these army lists were chosen to be able to do, be able to play in Code One well, I think that's part of the reason why they're like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so all the factions have like high armor attack pieces,
mm-hmm.
pretty much. I don't know if I think
so. So how would you define them? I guess we're trying to talk about the factions. How would you define differentiate? We talked about how yes, okay, the four factions they used are a little bit more samey, but what makes Pano different than Yu Jing, different from O12, different from combined? And let's throw in a little bit of the fluff and the look, basically, because you know, like we said, that's what we find really interesting and important.
Yeah. So I guess going back to the two most similar ones, Pano and Yu Jing. They both, aside from having different colors, they both have like the heavily armored look to a lot of their units. Mm-hmm. And they have winter jackets on because of Operation Coldstrom.
Yeah, they look great. I love it. Apparently winter jackets are great fashion.
Yeah. So they have that similar look going on. And they're both human as well, which because Shazvasti are frogmen, they do look different from that. Mm-hmm. And they both have fairly, well, with all the human factions, which are O12, Pano and Yu Jing, have fairly similar looking robot options.
Okay.
I don't see them as hugely different.
Okay.
So that's all similar between them, but then the combined robots look quite a bit different.
All right. Organic. You want me to talk about these differences? Or you, yeah, you talk sure. about combined?
Because that's the only one I own, so I don't.
Okay. So let's go just generally go through the four different factions. Okay, Pano, the idea of Pano is that they're like basically the superpower of in the future, right? Earth is basically has gone into the stars as a fledgling civilization. And in Infinity, you're talking about the human sphere, which is revolving around humans, right? And so the biggest nation is basically the capitalist, I think they call it the hyperpower, to differentiate from superpowers of modern day. So the idea is that it's kind of like the West, basically, but they're actually not the West in the fluff. But they're basically like supposed to be the capitalist superpower of the future. And then Yu Jing is the Asian superpower, basically based off of China, right? They took all of the stereotypes of China and smashed them all together, and they said now, and they're also the second runner up in the future versus the capitalist superpower. And then we have O12, which is supposed to be the UN, but in the future, the UN is,
like they're combined with Google. They have the AI that runs everything.
Yeah, and they have been given military power, so they're not just about having nations come together and talk about it. They threaten other nations with their military might as well. So so that's kind of like, imagine the UN had a large military arm, right? Mm-hmm. And control over the AI that, you know, runs society. And then the final one is Combined, which is this alien invading faction. And the Combined in Code One is specified around the Frogmen, the Shazvasti, which is one of the races that the Combined is using to invade the human sphere. And so that's the general kind of theme. Now, in terms of gameplay, in terms of miniatures, I feel like Pano and Yujing are, like you said, they're similar in that their emphasis is on heavy infantry, right? They kind of have tough guys who can and go out there and fight. And obviously their themes are different because one is basically Asian themed, Asian stereotype themed. And then the other is
your European knight themed.
Yeah, it's supposed to be about Southeast Asia and everything like that. But the amount of Southeast Asian themes and Indian themes. So yeah, it's supposed to be the future capitalist nations of, what's it, Brazil, Southeast Asia, and India form the core, and then Europe joins later. But because the company Corvus Belli is European, even though that's the theme, they have no real, like the look of them is European, has the European aesthetic.
Yeah, it has the European knight aesthetic.
Yeah, exactly. So like, there's knights, and then there's the general kind of European Western kind of theme. So you don't really see much Indian or Southeast Asian looking things, even though fluff wise it's supposed to be the major block. So yeah. So besides the look though, what kind of differentiates gameplay between Pano and Yujing, even though they're about, you know, big guys with high tech, high tech heavy infantry kind of thing, is that Pano is, I guess everyone is more, I guess, specialized at killing, right? So each guy that you take is just has more like one kind of thing that they do that's really good, whereas the Yujing guys are generally, even though they're both like heavy infantry, the Yujing guy will be more versatile, so
probably have a few more weapons on him.
Yeah, then, exactly, to handle a few more options or situations, whereas the Pano guy will be more straight about shooting a guy dead or doing one specific kind of thing, and that's kind of how they differentiate them.
And I guess Yujing might have a little better close combat ability, but the game's not based around close combat.
I think it actually has significantly better close combat ability. But like you said, it's, yeah.
The focus of the game's not around close combat. It's a futuristic shooting war. So
yeah, that's a minor kind of theme, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other guys, O12, what do you consider O12?
I haven't looked at them in enough detail. Like, I will build an army for them, but I haven't considered what they're as good at. They've got more ability to sort of stop your opponent versus killing them. They've got more maybe passive weapons that get them stuck in place, and maybe a little better hacking ability to slow your opponent down without necessarily killing them before you try and get them into a trap with certain tech, and then you finish them off.
Okay, so yeah, like O12, I think also actually has a decent amount of tough infantry and things like that. I think visually they're modeled after like police, like sci-fi police force.
Yeah, they've got a few Judge Dredd models going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess their theme is more like stopping people and then finishing them off, as opposed to Pano, which is shooting you dead. Specializing in that, or Yujing as being versatile and like being able to do all, like a little bit of everything, right? So so you'd say, I guess O12 has more of a disruption kind of feel?
Yeah, none of us have put it on the table yet amongst our group of friends. So I wouldn't,
for Code One.
Yes. So I would say that's what it looks like on paper, but we'll have to see how it plays.
Yeah. Right, and now Combined. Tell us about Combined, how they look like, what's good about them. and how to differentiate?
So honestly, because most of it is that frog Shazvasti men look, which, I mean, it's a pretty good look, but so many of the models have the same look to them that they don't feel like they have the same variability of like really big guys and then like smaller, just regular infantry linemen. They have more of a similar look throughout the whole army.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you like the look,
I think part of the reason for that is that at least the models that bring into Code One, they're not the Shazvasti in general are not heavily armored. In fact, they're still expensive and good at fighting, but it's not about what you'd say like tanking hits and like just winning by attrition. It's more about being really good at sneaking around and like shooting the guy when he's not ready.
Yeah, so in the game there's camouflage, which puts your models in a state where you can't shoot at them directly unless they reveal themselves, or you manage to like spot them that they're really that marker is really an enemy. So they have lots of options for putting those troops in that camouflage state on the board. And they have lots of, I guess you differentiated Pano from Yu Jing, saying that Pano has like, they have, each troop has their one main weapon they focus on using. Mm-hmm. And the Shazvasti though tend to have quite a few weapons on them for their good expensive troops. So rather than just being good at one thing, they're often harder to hit in a shootout for their good pieces. And they'll have a few weapons on them. And some of them also just straight up regenerate after you shot them. If they fall down, get back up again.
They're a little bit less tanky, but they're a little bit more, but they're still survivable in their own way.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not about like, I guess you wouldn't say you ram at, like you run into them head first and overpower them, or you like just stay there and just, so let's say the Pano or Yujing style would be, you know, you shoot them directly, head face first, shoot them, right? Pano would be like, literally, I have this one gun, I'm going to use it. Yujing is a little bit more like, oh, well, whoever I'm fighting, I'm going to use the appropriate weapon, right? But they're still saying, I'm going to hit you in the face, mano a mano, and when you attack me back, I'm going to tank it mano a mano. Right.
Yeah. Whereas when you attack combined, you're not sure necessarily what you're attacking all the time.
Because of all the camo, and then their ability to move around and hide and sneak around people seems quite good. And actually, if you get hit in the face with a Shazvasti guy, right, with the right weapon, he's much more likely to crumple. Like they have good defenses, but if they get hit in their weak point, they kind of fall much faster than Pano or Yujing or O12 army.
Yep. If you break through their defenses, they have problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That's generally the kind of theme of that. If anything else about the specific factions they chose, or
So Pano is sort of one of the main looks of the game. So the game has the sort of power armor look to a lot of the heavy stuff. So those factions really show it off. Mm-hmm. So having Pano or Yujing in there really does show off like the look of a lot of the cool heavy stuff from Infinity. Mm-hmm. So I think that was one of the main choices. Maybe they didn't have to put both in.
That's a good point. So you think that the reason why they chose like Pano, Yujing, and O12 is because of all of the heavy armor? It has a, you know, almost a direct comparison to like Space Marines.
Yeah, but with much more detail, much more realistic.
In my opinion, yeah. Well, yeah, variety in aesthetic and design. Yeah.
So maybe it would appeal to the people who have like only been exposed to that before.
Hmm. That's a good point. I actually didn't really think about that.
And putting an O12 in the other, I think they were just due for being released. honestly, they just needed, like, one was about to come out and the other needed to be redone. So they just, they were on the list. So they made it in there.
Ah, okay. So, like, and, you feel like Mando... the aliens
are just different than the other ones. So
yeah, so the aliens make sense, right? You have aliens and then the quintessential human factions, which are directly comparable to Space Marines, which is the primary miniatures that people look at. So they're like, oh yeah, these are cool, basically alternative looking kind of space heavy infantry. So that kind of drags people in.
And space then, with swords, yeah.
Yeah, and then O-12 is literally, oh yeah, and what's our next faction? Oh, we have... These guys are next. We might as well shove those guys in. You know what? That probably has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, that's my guess.
Yeah. Okay, so...
But like we said, it overall, does play differently, yep. So... It's...
Yep. So overall, I do want to go a little bit more into what makes Infinity Code 1 so good for a... starting person. So we said everything is more pared down, and we kind of compare it more to more about comparing it to the old game, but in the context of someone new and starting, I want to talk a little bit more about the choices they've made in terms of paring things down and why I really, really like a lot of the choices they made. So I do want to go over like the 10 man choice of saying that, you know, you can choose 10 men.
Yeah, so when you're playing the full game, you're thinking of between like 10 and like 18 models on the board. Mm-hmm. And you're not sure how big you should go when you swap things out. It makes, like, you're not sure if you should go for one less model or you should like replace things. Mm-hmm. So building the list is actually quite complicated in the full version of the game to get that balance between having like the number of models you want on the board to get things done. But you now stop thinking about that when you're just like, it's going to be 10.
Yeah, and yeah, definitely the ability to create a list of 10 men, right? And the fact that it's always 10 is really helpful. I also feel like 10 guys is, you know, it's the number of fingers you have. So it's just a nice number, and it's also something that is not super intimidating for a person to paint up, right? Like 10 models when you're good, just getting in, like even if, like, obviously, if you are, well, there are two groups of people that are coming in, right? 10 guys will be, let's say you're trying to get someone who plays board games usually. 10 guys is a fairly like low number to say, oh, you know, you just got to, you know, assemble and paint 10 guys. It's not super strenuous, right, to get people into. And then the other thing is if you're coming in from a game like, I don't know, even War Machine or 40K, 10 men is like one squad.
It feels like nothing. It doesn't feel like a huge undertaking to get them on the board.
Yeah. And because of the way Infinity is played, it's supposed to be like two covert ops teams fighting, right? It's not about all out war, which is like 40K or even historical games. That each of your units and 10 guys does not look the same, right? So it's like, when you think about it, I don't know, if you're like a 40K player and you're thinking, oh, maybe I should try out this Infinity thing. All you have to do is paint one squad of guys, right? 10 guys. And the other thing is, like, because every single character that you choose can be different, especially in Code 1 because there's no link teams, what that means is that it's... You know how in like when you're normally painting like giant squads, you're like, oh, I'm going to reward myself by painting this character after I painted, slogged through 10 of the same guy. Yeah. Every single character you paint in Infinity, and especially Code 1, because you only have 10 people, it's going to be a character, right?
Yeah, there's only...
You're only getting the good feelings of painting something new and different.
Yeah, there's only 3 models that repeat, and they're all different sculpts too. So
yeah. Yeah, so to me, that's like a really... really good kind of size. Once you get over 10, you start having to use your toes, and that becomes harder for people to count. So I really like that number.
Yeah, most people don't batch paint in numbers much larger than that if they aren't kind of like into spending. Yeah. If they want to feel like a sense of accomplishment once in a while. Because when you do more than that, it takes forever to
finish. Oh my god, it's so painful. When I painted like 30 orcs, I decided I would never do that again. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I was painting my Rising Sun miniatures for the Rising Sun board game. And they had 10 units that are roughly the same, right? It's actually not true. There's like four models, basically, but you have to paint like duplicates, two of each. And that felt like a slog. Uh-huh. I was like, oh my God. To be fair, I had to paint five of them.
Five factions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, this is so painful. So the fact that, you know, Infinity, you just paint one 10-man squad, or maybe two if you're painting your friend's army so that you can start playing, it's a lot easier on your, just to get there and paint. And of course, as we all know, you should paint your minis.
Oh yeah.
Don't play it. Yeah, don't paint metal. All right. So the other thing is, we did talk about this briefly, but I do want to come back and talk about why the small size of the board, the smaller size of the board is good. So we already said it's a 32x48, right? And that's allows you to have a lot less terrain. We already said that.
So I guess going back one step, there's 3-point levels that mm-hmm. they suggest for code one. Mm-hmm. I think it's 15, 25, and 30.
Yep.
And the board size changes depending on how many, like what point level you're playing at, which is sort of based around the poster size that comes with the starter set.
Yeah, because basically the starter set comes with a poster where one side is a poster. And the other side is the floor for terrain, like for a mat.
Yeah.
So that instead of playing on, let's say, just an entirely green velvet thing, you're playing on a mat that looks like futuristic terrain, like a futuristic landscape. I think it's roadways or something like that.
Yep. So the 15 is basically like what you get in the starter box
mm-hmm.
without sort of adding custom stuff. And it's more of an, I would describe it as more of an introductory point level. But because every model you take gives you another activation to make, everything that's left like alive on your board side gives you an activation to make, that in order to move your guys around bigger tables, you need to have more models to get more activations every turn. So when you've only got, say, the 6 models you start with, you can only make 6 activations a turn, which limits how far you can get across the board, because you could spend all 6 activations on one guy. But
And that's why you can Rambo. Yes.
Limited number of orders means if the board gets too big, you may never encounter each other. So the points or sizes are tailored that you can actually get to your opponent. And we've been playing...
And interact, Yep.
So the middle point level of 25, because every level maxes out at 10 models.
Uh-huh.
That we've been playing the 25 point level. And I think from other people I've heard talk about the game, they prefer the 25 point level as well. Just because when you start going to the 30-point level, you now still only have 10 orders, but now the board has become, rather than 32 inches wide by 48 long, it's now 48 by 48.
Yeah.
And with that 10 orders, it becomes difficult to traverse the whole 48-inch wide board. And some troops may never do anything in the course of the game. Well,
because they just don't have the orders and you don't have the ability to get to them.
Yeah, they're just so far out of place. But at the 25-point level... with the board only being 32 inches wide, you can sort of bring any models into action if you really want to. They may not be the closest unit, but if you really want to bring it into the battle, you can. So I've found that 30, the smaller board size at 25 is just much better. Also, with the bigger point level, you're forced, because now you're still trying to fill those 10 slots, but you've got more points to use, you're now pushed towards you're forced to use more of the heavier units.
Mm-hmm.
So there's now less ability for you to like vary what goes into your force.
So in some ways, even though you have you think you have more options because you have 30 points instead of 25 points of troops, you still only can have 10 people. So that actually ends up limiting the number of choices to make an effective army, because you need 5 more points, but you still need the same number of guys, which means it's less likely for you to use the cheaper guys and more likely to use the more expensive guys.
Yep.
Yeah. So it does feel like, and this is one thing that I think is great, is like they're kind of pushing you towards the 25 point list, right? Although it did sound like they're maybe that's just right now, but it sounds like they're kind of encouraging you to play the 25 point level. And I'd say that is like the level that you want to play Code One. Like we said, 10 men, you can relatively easily get to 10 units in 25 points, and you have to take a variety of guys. Because of the size of the board, the action like happens, there will be a lot of action in the game. And then the other thing is that with only having it, so in the 25 point level, we said you had a 32 inch by 48 board. That is two starter terrain packs. So if you are not into building your terrain, right, or let's say you're not ready because you're spending all your time painting up your models, you can buy the terrain pack separately, right? And it is cardboard terrain, but it's pretty sturdy, right? And you just take two packs and you have most of your terrain, and then you just need to, like we said, add a little bit more scatter terrain, maybe buy a building or something like that, right? Or make one building, right, or so. And that is a really big, great selling point for people just getting into the game. And then the other thing is, like, for us, playing a game quickly, setting up 32 by 48 inches of terrain is a lot easier than 48 by 48. It's just a lot quicker to set up the table and get into playing.
Yeah, now this isn't the problem we have because we've played war games for so long. So we have the boards to put down to make 4 foot by 4 foot boards. But if you've got more of a standard size kitchen table, that 32 inches now means you could play across the width of it if you've got sort of...
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I can't believe I didn't even talk about that.
No, I haven't thought about this before, but now just realizing for starter players and like the bare minimum you need, now you don't need to go to the hardware store and start buying like 4 foot wide plywood.
Yeah. Making your own 4 foot by 4 foot extension on your table. Because most kitchen tables are 33 by 48 or 48 or more, right?
The length usually varies more than the width because there's sort of an ideal width
that's right.
across from someone.
That's right. But 32 by 48 is relatively easy to find. Actually, my kitchen table is 32 by 48. I think it's 33 actually by 48. But that's like, actually more than that. It's 33 by 50, I think. And so the ability to actually just play Infinity on my table without having to go out and get my extensions, which of course I have because we've been playing for so long. But being able to do that is so much easier for people to play. And I think I even mention this all the time about like the newer starter games and even like our game, right? Our game is 24 by 32, which can even fit on like your
photo table. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, 32 by 48 to get a game like Infinity that's so crunchy and everything like that is definitely a huge selling point, especially if you don't have like a house where you have like a special room to play your miniature games. If you just have got to do that, that's like, that in and of itself makes it such a good, just that change is like so underappreciated to keep your to actually play the game, right? Even if you love the game, just the barrier of saying, oh man, I gotta set up this 48 by 48 board, or I could go and sit down and play my video games, right? That could be the difference, right? That thing that tips it over. But when you're like, oh no, we can just clear off my kitchen table, we can play there. Like, that makes it so much easier to get there going and playing.
Yep. Actually, honestly, I don't
feel like
boards.
Sorry?
Honestly, I actually don't own the 4 foot boards. I could go
really?
Have them by the I could have them by the afternoon, but I don't.
Oh, do we generally play at my place then? Have we played at my place generally for like, because we've been playing on 4 foot by 4 foot for a long time, like over 10 years. Really? Yeah,
we just hobby.
Whenever we go to your place, we don't play? I guess it's true.
No, we just hobby.
Oh, yeah.
I
know why, because you didn't bother to get the 4 foot by 4 foot boards.
I have the terrain. I just don't have the boards.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. What else we got here?
So do we want to talk? tactics for new players, or do we not want to go that far?
I want to go talk about more. The last thing that we kind of touched on initially that I want to go into a little bit more is the complication. Both good and bad, to dive a little bit deeper.
So with the full version of Infinity, I found that for new players to learn the game, the barrier to actually just go read through the rule book and learn the game was almost insurmountable for most people, that the best way for them to learn was just to have it shown to them by someone else. Yeah. So, okay, here's what happens when you activate a guy. You have two things you do during the turn. Do you want to, like, you just introduce it first? Do you want to move first, or do you want to shoot and move? And basically most of the time you move then shoot, just because of how the response system moves. So, okay, say move your guy where he wants to go, and then your opponent then says what they want to do, then you say what you want to do with your second half. Like, you just explain that to people, which is far easier than reading through all the rules, sort of get that explanation. And then from that point, you just start, you add stuff.
And you can curate the options, right, that you can do for those actions.
Yeah, you tell them, don't worry about all this other stuff. Just start off by doing these few things and using these couple guys. And then just, like, tell them what to look up, because they'll have the list. Or you want to print it usually and give it to them if you're helping them learn. Or they've got it on their phone often, so you can tell them where to go to look for information. So, like, okay, do you know what weapons this guy has? And if he doesn't know, you're like, oh, go look it up. Or you just tell him you've got this one. And then let them know to go look their weapon chart to get all the info. And just sort of have, they can fight just starting that way. And then you're like, okay, in this situation, you actually have this you could do with this guy, because he's got this ability. You just sort of keep adding things. Whereas if you were to have to try and learn all the abilities at once, a new player doesn't know what the priority is for learning rules. Mm-hmm. So it's often more difficult. So, but I guess with Code 1, though, they do sort of have some introductory missions. We haven't played them because we don't need them. But they layer up the number of rules that are going on.
Yeah. And they did do the kind of, I don't know what you call it, Fantasy Flight kind of way of introducing the game, where they basically, the very beginning of the book is I think it's 15 pages. It's actually still a lot. Like we said, the game is not, it's still complicated. But it's 15 pages just to run you through a game, right? Where they're like, okay, take these models and go and do this and then run through how the game works. So it's kind of trying to do that demo, like you're talking about, for a person who's trying to read it. I know some people are a little bit more not quite as happy with, like, maybe they think that they could have done a better description, but at least that kind of thing I think does help a new player.
Yeah, because that's how you would do it in person if you were teaching someone, and they're kind of trying to replicate that in-person thing, which is, it's in my opinion, the best way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that they have a lot, like we said, they've pared down a lot of the extra things that you just have to remember, like trying to keep it to a core thing, I think is very helpful if you're just trying to get in, or just, like I said, if you just don't have to remember his stuff. The cognitive load is a lot lower. And I do know there's been...
The cognitive load in N3 was so high that there was no one book to read to even learn the game. It didn't exist. You couldn't even go do it.
So
that's why...
You almost have to learn from the wiki. They're like, oh, this situation came up. Can I look through the wiki? And then you follow three links down, and then you kind of figure out how to do it. And I do feel like one of the things that I noticed, like Infinity, like we said, it's even Code 1, which is a simpler version, is still very complicated. And if you're the type of person that finds that Code 1 is too complicated, basically, I think some of our friends mentioned this, that even though Code Infinity is a great game, it's not for everyone, right? The way you play is different than a lot of games, and of course, like, just the fact that it's skirmish and all these kind of things, the way the reaction kind of way you play and the complication is not for everyone. But I feel like Code 1 is for more people because they tried to remove, if you have a barrier of things being too deep and too complicated, where you could say that it doesn't matter a lot for the overall strategy, those people like that, it's more likely to, I guess, snag them, acceptable for those people. So they don't have that barrier.
Yeah, and I guess if you don't have a group to join who can teach you the game, Code 1 you could digest on your own if you had to.
Yeah, I think so. It's because it's like the base rules and there's not as many like extra rules. So when you play a code one of the good things I think with code one is because it's they cut out all these other things. When you're playing against someone who is let's say a veteran, they're much less likely to gotcha because they know a rule that you didn't know.
Yeah, there's just fewer rules to know, so that's.
Exactly. So when they beat you, it'll be because they played a lot and they know the tactics of the core thing. So it feels more accepting for a person because it feels like, oh, I know most of the rules. I'm not getting gotcha because I didn't remember that you can throw a grenade or whatever. This kind of last template is actually this type of thing as opposed to this. Like, I remembered all these things. I just didn't know the implications of how they play out on the battlefield, right? As opposed to with Infinity, you have to remember a lot of things before you get to that level, right? And
Yes,
honestly, if you don't play it enough, you just can't remember it because there's so much
you
going
can't even remember all the different types of troops in their army.
on. In your own army.
Yeah, that's it. You can't even like think about how to build your own army.
Yeah, so I think that really helps, even though the game is still very complicated. And so, what do you think about? I think you mentioned there's a lot less defensive tech in Code One.
Yeah, I wanted to get back to that. A big thing that most players, like the big part of, is the, I would say it's the first thing that new players have to learn is how to keep their model safe. Because often you'll think, oh, I want to be watching everywhere so they don't sneak up on me. But the easier, more accessible you make your models to shoot, the easier it is for your opponent to kill them.
Yes.
Because getting across the board actually takes a lot of activations. So just by the mere fact of you hiding your guy, you're now eating up their turn by forcing them to come towards you. But the thing is, once they get close to you and you haven't stopped them, they can now start picking off your guys. So you've got to be very careful about how you decide to set up your defenses in the game.
And it also honestly feels, because of that, it almost feels more like the kind of gunfights you see in TV and movies. And I don't know nothing about real gunfights, so I don't know if this is actually how it happens. I'm just judging by the movies I watch, where people are like, they shoot and they hide, right? They're not sitting out there just looking. And when they do, they get, right? Defensively, when they're just sitting out there with their head up, in a movie, they get their head shot off, right? So it just feels more like the actual like movie cinematic kind of feel, right? And so
Yeah,
it
and the
feels
people
more
who do.
real than, yeah.
And if something is sitting out there, it's like a tank sitting out there. You're like, oh man, it's a tank. I can't just pick off a tank in one shot.
And they
So.
might sit out there to try and slow you down, which but there are two rules that I do think that I kind of miss. So like you said, there's a lot more tankiness in the game. But it kind of means because they're missing some defensive tech, it kind of does feel like the attack is a lot stronger than it is in the main game. And so one of those things that I would like is if they added some of the general defensive kind of tech that they had in the main game. And the two that I'm thinking about are one, suppressive fire, and two, the guts roll check. So, and I have a little bit of different reasons why I like the two. In terms of, let me explain kind of what they do. So suppressive fire is the ability for someone if to, even if they don't see anyone, just to like, with the right weapon, the
You get
idea is
three
that they're not.
shots. You get three shots back instead of one shot back if you put them into that state.
So normally when you're defending, right? So when someone shoots you, in defense, you can shoot one shot back, right? And then to their normal three shots, right? But then if you're in suppressive fire, you have a more limited range, but you can shoot three shots instead of one shot. And that's great for defensively, like protecting yourself. And I feel like if you do anything from that point, it becomes you break your suppressive fire, right? And I feel like that kind of models more about, what you see again in movies, right? Like if the enemy is just trying to strike straight at you, then you just start firing a lot to kind of lay a hail of fire, suppress the fire, so they can't just run at you, right? So I really liked that in the game, and it gave, I feel like, the defending player a little bit more defense, so it felt more like they're like, you know, you can set up strong defense at any one point, as opposed to just, yeah,
if you yeah, need it felt to. More like, it felt like more you were having a real gunfight back and forth because you prepped for the gunfight, rather than just being like, oh, maybe someone's going to come at me. You're like, no, someone's definitely coming at this guy, and you're ready to fire back.
Lay that fire down. Yeah, so I really liked that portion, but and I understand why they removed it because of the complication, right? Again, it's an extra rule, but I feel like in terms of at least the base rules of the game, it is a really good thing to rule that adds more than it's worth the complication it adds because of the dynamic nature it creates in on the tabletop to have that amount of defense if you set it up correctly, right?
Yep.
Of course, to make it work, you have to have enough terrain so that people can not, like, if you are suppressive firing, that they have an ability to walk around you or avoid the suppressive fire and still attack you, right?
Yeah, if they want to spend a lot of activations to run around behind that guy, if you've got enough terrain, now the game can
let or avoid them, right? So that you need enough terrain for that rule to work. But to me, that's really kind of what sells the game overall, right? And then the other thing is guts rolls. So this kind of has an interesting effect because, like, if you get hit in the game in Code 1, you just stand there, right? And you take the shot.
Or you either stay there or you die.
Yeah. And so in the original game, you could, if you got hit, you could duck back into cover, like move 2 inches. And sometimes if you fail your guts roll, like you can either voluntarily duck back in, or if you want to stay out.
Yeah, or if you're up on a roof and there's sort of like a short wall in front of you.
Yeah. And you thought your enemy was lucky. Sorry? Yep.
Yeah, also if you're like behind some short piece of cover, you can hit the ground and then sort of hide behind it. So that's the other way of getting out of the way.
Yeah, and to me it felt very, again, more cinematic, right? More like how you think about it in movies. When some guy gets hit, they don't, and they think they're going to die because, let's say, they were expecting, I don't know, a guy with a pistol and then a guy with a heavy machine gun showed up and they get hit once. You would think that in a movie, the guy would be like, oh my God, and duck into cover. But in Code 1, they do stay out there, right? Which is a rule that I feel like, again, this is just cinematic. But again, it does add more complication, right? The idea that you can duck beneath, or sometimes you have to duck beneath if you want to stay out there. But the unit fails their willpower rule, they need to duck in. So I felt like that was a great portion of the game, and removing that does, I'm not, again, it's, yes, it reduces complexity, and yes, you have the basics of the game through, but I felt like that portion was worth it.
Yeah, it loses some realism and it really weakens the defensive ability because now the thematic part about, like, oh, you take a hit and you're like, oh, I don't want this fight anymore, you hide. Mm-hmm. And the defensive portion of just the gameplay, that if you've got, say, a multi-wound model out there and you don't like the fight, you can take one hit, go down, then wait till it's your turn to respond at full power.
Yeah.
So not just having to stay there till you get killed.
And I feel like, I know kind of the reason why, again, they did it is just complication, right? Now the rules for if you get hit, so basically when you get hit in the old game, you have to make a roll. And if you succeeded on the roll, you can choose, basically, you can choose, if you succeed on the roll, to duck into cover or stay out there, right? So let's say you're a guy in suppressive fire and a pistol guy shows up and they get lucky and they hit you and you survive. You actually still want to stay out there, right? Keep on fire at them, right? So, but if it's an HMG, you want to duck in. Now, if you succeed on the roll, you can choose to stay out there or duck in. But if you fail, you have to duck in. And the issue with that, the rules, that is, to me, the complicated part that made them remove it. Because the rules in Infinity are, if you fail your roll, you are forced to duck in, but there's specific steps about how you have to, like, how you move to duck in, which is the complicated part.
And there's abilities on different models that change how that whole sequence works and what your choices are.
Yes. Although so technically they could have just not chosen models with those rules or even not given those models rules. Yeah. And I do feel like if they, because they're using the rules in the main game, they didn't change it, right? Although I think they could, but in my opinion, they could have changed it to make it easier, right? While still retaining the basic rules, right? So the way I would think about it is if you succeed, you can choose, right? To duck it, you get a free 2-inch move, but you have to have more cover, right? You can't have less cover. You can just choose.
Yeah, well, if you succeed.
Then if you fail, your opponent gets to choose where you move, right? Your opponent can move you 2 inches as long as you have the same cover or more. And to me, that's basically how you would do it, right? And I think that basically kind of gives the theme of what's happening without keeping it super complicated.
Yeah, it does slow down the game a bit because then during every firefight, you've got to make one additional roll afterwards. So maybe the speed was worth the payoff. Who knows?
I would say I like that portion. And then,
oh, I know, like I said,
right, it does slow it down. It does make it slower, like you said. It's an extra roll every basically firefight.
Yeah, but the question is, is there too much reduction in defensive ability because of these two things being gone?
Yeah.
Well, there's actually more things. There's fire teams where a whole bunch of guys combine to gain superpowers, which maybe that will go away in the future during a revision to the rule.
That's just a terrible portion. That's one of the best things about Code 1 that they don't put that in. In my opinion, it's just like this old crufty rule from like second edition, and they're on fourth edition and they're still using the same rules, and it doesn't match any of the changes that they've done for the rest of the game.
Yeah, so they've indicated that they're going to change it, but that's another huge defensive tech that's also removed in Code 1. So defense is vastly reduced compared to the typical normal game.
Again, though, link teams also give a huge offensive boost as well. So it's questionable on whether that is a defensive or offensive, like whether that's a good thing in terms of strengthening defense or not.
Yeah.
But to make the defense good, they have added a couple of other rules that I feel like, we're talking about complication, right? You want to reduce the complication for the game. I do feel like instead of removing those two things, which technically I feel like they're core to make the game work the way it should, right? In terms of the gameplay, in terms of having the defensive and offensive strategies and being able to keep the enemy back, I feel like those two things are important.
Yeah, because a lot of the game is about moving up and controlling territory. Mm-hmm. But if your ability to defend yourself is really weak, now you don't, like, trying to control territory is too difficult, so you just more want to kill things and eliminate them, so now the territory is yours, rather than, like, staying and trying to hold it.
Mm-hmm. And so it does, in some ways, it changes the game to be more like cat and mouse, which, you know, to be fair, it's a fine game, right? In fact, it's more similar, honestly, to more other miniature games, right?
Yeah.
In the way that other miniature games play, skirmish games. Right. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, maybe it's fine. It's just different.
Yeah. Cause in many games, like other miniature games, you can break your opponent's army on their turn. They attack you and your army was set up so well in defense that you win the firefights. Their guys are all killed and they lost on their turn. Your opponent loses on their own turn, which is makes the game very different than other games.
Oh yeah. And it also can be feels bad. So it can make. Yeah, so maybe that's partially why that they kind of reduced it. But the other thing, they did put in other defensive tech that I felt was not needed, like total reaction bots, which are one of these very, very strong defensive techs in the game that basically, it's exactly the thing like suppressive fire, except even in some ways more powerful, because basically allows you to fire full burst, right? All of your dice on defense. Right, usually you can only roll one die instead of the normal 3 or 4. But total reaction allows you to fire your full burst, and the total reaction bot has a 4-burst weapon, which is very, very strong.
And it sees in all directions, unlike most guys who only see it out the front.
So you can't even sneak behind it to kill it, which you can definitely do for most guys. So this is like they added in a unit that has some of the strongest defensive tech in the game, but removed the ability for most units, their normal defensive tech, right, which is suppressive fire and dodging it, right, which is a little bit odd in my opinion. And I feel like part of the reason they did that is because they just wanted to sell the remotes, right? They're like, I do feel like this is one of those things where sales dictated the rules they put into their game, which is generally not a good idea.
Well, I think the remotes are still
making the game better.
I think the remotes are still perfectly fine units in the game because they're quite fast and they're often useful for the mission. So I think they're.
Yeah, the other remotes, but they wanted the other remotes, but I feel like in terms of keeping the game like tight, they did not need to put in the total reaction remote. Now, as it is right now, it feels almost mandatory because they removed the suppressive fire and everything like that to slow the opponent down on their turn. So that to me is kind of a, in my opinion, a negative, right, in the choices they did. And I think it's specifically because they're like, oh, we want to redo the remotes and sell them as part of Code 1 as a starter thing, because it also gives a lot of character in terms of what you look at the army, right, that they don't, they're not all just infantry. They have some robots that are running around as
you
well.
You got your robot support backing you up. Mm-hmm.
So it looks cooler when you look at the army, but I think adding that total reaction, and the boxes that they sell always come with a total reaction bot. Right? So they're like, oh, well, we have to put that in, right? But again, that total reaction special rules are literally just for that one remote. And so if you're talking about trying to pare things down to be simple, they didn't need to add them. And the more, even more egregious thing about in terms of complication, right? And like we said, they're trying to keep the cognitive overload, overhead low, but they also added in helper bots, which is literally the only G-Sync robots in the game, and G-Sync is really complicated.
Yeah, basically it means you activate at the same time as,
yeah,
like you have a controller and the G-Sync little robot, and they activate at the same time, but because it's so, normally only one model activates at a time in Code 1, like Infinity has multiple things activate at the same time through a whole bunch of situations, yeah, but in Code 1 it's the only situation where two things move at once, and the number of rules that need to be explained to allow you to react to two different things moving is just so long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree that was not needed.
Yeah. And like, if you strip that out, you could easily fit in the suppressive fire rule and maybe even the guts check, right?
Yep. But it just comes down to being able to use the models that exist in the box. So
yeah, again, I feel like they wanted to sell these support guys, and the support guys, because they're both sold for Code 1 and the more complicated N4, they had to give you an ability to use those remotes, right? And so they had to put in that rule, I feel like, because literally those remotes are not needed for Code 1. Like, no. There's no reason to have them in the game, but they are, so whatever. All right, so do we have anything else to want to talk about complication? About Code 1? Do you think that people will bounce off of it, of the game, in terms of how complicated Code 1 is?
Well,
I feel like it will. Yeah, go on.
I think if they're willing to play the full game, they won't. So I think whoever can handle Code 1 can pretty much handle the whole game, but it comes down to whether they have enough time to play the whole game. If let's say that player who's interested in this style of like really deep tactical skirmish game, is if they're into that gameplay but they don't have enough time on their hands to keep up with the game or just get in games all the time, or build tons of models, like they would enjoy Code 1 if they play once a month or like once every 2 months. They can keep it in their head. But if they've got the time to play once a week, they're just going to move up to the full version of the game.
That's true. I think it's a good filtering kind of thing where, like, if you can't take if you don't like Code 1, you're very unlikely to like N4, right? The main game, right? But it's true that I think there are going to be people like that like Code 1 more, right? And in some ways, I do like Code 1 more because it's removed a lot of the things and the extraneous things, and especially link teams, which I think are a curse on Infinity in general. In the way that they are now, right? I don't like the idea of linked teams. I really dislike the implementation. Yep. And so,
So I think my biggest dislike of Code One is what draws a lot of people, including me, into Infinity is the look of the game and being able to make an army that looks how you want to. And because there's just so many different aesthetics out there that it's going to, one aesthetic is going to really appeal to you in a certain one of the armies.
Yeah.
I want like to be able to get that. And a lot of people want their army to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. So with the reduced number of factions and the reduced number of troops available, you lose that in Code One. Not that things don't look cool, but like there's one thing, if you're really set on it, you just can't have it.
Yeah, I do feel like, to me, the biggest thing is the limited number of factions. Four factions, like we said, in terms of the overall aesthetics of the game, the four factions they chose, are three of them are really similar, right? And I do think that's going to be solved because they did say they're going to, maybe they're only releasing two a year. They're going to be adding in factions, right? Until I think they get all main factions. So next year, I think they're going to add two more factions that hopefully look significantly differently. And I think that can really help kind of, you know, get people excited and drag them in, right? But I do agree that the more homogeneity of three of the four factions that they chose to put in definitely is hurting Code One.
Yeah, and for players like us that play the game more, being able to create an army that's really different than like everybody else's army is a big appeal. So once you start playing more, like the full version of the game becomes way more appealing.
Yeah. I don't find that as big of a deal, but maybe it's because I like that kind of 10 man kind of look with a bunch of heavy armor and stuff like that. Even when I played Hack, I liked having a couple of tough guys. It's just that I had way more light infantry.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I typically don't play with very solid armies. I usually play with more armies
that guys
are sneaky and can sustain losses and then make some unexpected strike rather than just be like, you take the territory and you keep marching forwards. And I'm like, I don't feel like that.
Yeah, but I do. It's definitely like there's a difference in the way we play, right? About whether you like that kind of style, right? Mm-hmm. So I could see how that's an issue for some people.
Yep. But as I said, I think the biggest factor is just how much time the player has to dedicate to the game.
All right. Yeah, I think that's true. Do we want to talk a little bit now? Like, we played four games of Code One so far. Mm-hmm. Do we have any general, like, just direct thoughts personally of how you felt about the game and what you enjoyed and what you... I guess we talked generally about what we enjoyed and what we didn't enjoy, but in terms of personally, how it affected, like, what you thought about the game.
So I felt like it played quite a bit differently because, as you said, I usually play a different style. So being forced into taking like more expensive units changed the play style a lot, and I found that units, because we said there's less defensive tech. Mm-hmm. That really the Rambo units become much more significant in the game, which, I mean, for some people really like that, but I'm not. I like playing like that once in a while to switch it up, but that's not my normal play style. But choosing your Rambo units becomes very important, and having them be like really beefy or just really like having, just being really killy, not just like, because the normal version of the game, you can attack from lots of angles, and have more like medium-sized things accomplishing lots of stuff.
Now, you also have coordinated orders to allow you to move guys up, so when your main guy who dies attacks, the other guys are not going to be significantly far behind.
Yes, there's a bunch of ways to move more multiple guys at once, whereas now you move one guy at once, so whoever that one guy is becomes more important. Mm-hmm. So like I found the game focused a lot on like taking out your opponent's Rambo unit or just being really successful with yours. Like, you may want to have multiple Rambo units, which is, like, it's fairly, if you're going to play that style in regular Infinity or in Code 1, you probably want more than one in case it comes out of the dice. You might just lose it, and you want to have a backup one, or maybe it's just out of position, so it's better to send the other. You've got one, say, on your left side, one on your right side. You may just choose based on the position. But I find you have to have those pieces to be successful so far.
I'm not sure I fully agree, actually. I feel like because I think it's more just the difference in gameplay, that if you are trying to play in the normal N3 kind of style, but without all of these tools that you have, you're not going to be successful. And I do feel like I started playing more, basically more conservatively. Like, you can still Rambo, right? But for me, when I was playing more conservatively, it really helped. It really helped in terms of like success in playing, right? Not moving three or four guys, or not trying to fully Rambo with one guy and then leaving all the guys behind, which I honestly had that problem when I started Infinity, right? I would Rambo with one group and they die, and I hadn't spent the time to move the rest of my army. So I ended up being, even though initially I was doing really well, I kind of fell off because I had all my other guys are out of position. And so in this one, I think it's still the same where, like, yeah, you can Rambo really hard with your one person, right? Especially if they're in a good spot. But if you literally just spend all your orders on one guy to kill an extra person, you are then out of position in the overall game, because just like in normal Infinity, Code One is not just about killing, right? The mission is the priority, right? And there's like a bunch of missions where it's not even, I guess that technically there's only one mission in the book that is not even about killing at all, right?
Yep, and it's all about grabbing stuff.
It's all about grabbing stuff. And so, but a bunch of the other missions are not technically fully about killing. It's about killing the right people at the right time. So I think just like in the other game, you need to balance just going Ramboing with moving your guys up to be ready, right, for what happens next. And I do still think that kind of gameplay is still important. And I still think it's probably more optimal than just choosing one guy and, like you said, just hoping that they never die and just kill everyone. And the other thing is that the one guy you choose to go Rambo, because you only have 10 orders, and because just because of the units you're able to choose, I don't think you're going to be able to fully Rambo if your opponent is playing more defensively to counter that, right? And I think like hiding and stuff like that to waste your orders. So I think it actually does, just choosing one Rambo guy and hoping that they can like make it all the way through is probably going to be tougher.
Oh yeah. That's why I said you probably want more than one for different situations and just for different locations.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like, I think we just need that thing. I think we need to play more to fully see how it works out.
Because often the Rambo units will be those things that are more susceptible to hacking. Uh-huh. So yeah. once you figure out hacking, that's more, right. Already from the armies I've taken, I take high hacking coverage. As you played against me, I take.
Yeah, but yeah, it was interesting though. It definitely was interesting. And when I played against Leo, the ability for hacking to like modify the game was definitely significantly more than the previous, like in N3, partially because I think the hacking program has basically gone a little bit stronger and more versatile.
Even in N2 versus like 30.
Yes, exactly. But also partially because, like you said, heavy infantry, like the things that hacking affects are needed more in the way that the game plays. So there is more of like, by limiting everything, the ability for like there to be a kind of a rock, paper, scissors kind of idea so that you always have a chance to like hit someone in the right spot. I felt that there was more of that than there was in N3, especially because there are no link teams. Just want to emphasize that.
Yeah, because now you're not just using, now you don't just turn things super powered by putting them in a link and then having them kill things. So
yeah. Or the other way to play, which is honestly very, very useful in the other game, was spamming camo. It'll actually be interesting to see in the new game in N4, this is kind of getting a little bit outside of Code 1, that they've also limited the number of people in tournament games, that the units you can take, to 15.
Which I think is how people are going to play Nor, because it's sort of, the tournaments are based on the mission pack, and everybody usually plays the missions they put out. So I think
there's a lot, and they're just fun. They're just fun to play. And there's a lot of them.
The format most people play in. So now most people are going to be down at the 15 level versus when I looked at my lists, I was looking at like 16 to 18 things on the board. Because that's just, I just liked having orders to accomplish things from different angles versus just knowing that I would use one thing to accomplish most of the goal.
And I do wonder though, because there's only 15 orders on the table, if sectorials and link teams are going to dominate. Because now, 15 order list is about where link teams are the strongest. 15 order lists. So, like in the old game, they've weakened a lot of the things that made vanilla armies that couldn't take link teams strong. Like it seems like camo is becoming more expensive, which is one of the main strengths of how much camo spam you could do in a vanilla list. And it seems like warbands are weaker.
Because now you don't have as many slots, because they were really cheap guys, but they wouldn't add to your activations from your orders. Mm-hmm. So yeah, now that you start taking those, you now start losing orders that you can normally spend. Whereas before,
I feel like it's going to make link teams basically dominant. And maybe I'll be wrong, right? But it sounds like the ability for vanilla, and to be fair, in the old game, I think vanilla was stronger overall than link teams. But I don't think with the changes they did, they're going to be as strong as links as they are right now, because they basically said we're going to have the same link rules as we did in second edition.
Yeah. So for the code one people,
that's two editions ago, by the way. Just so.
So for the code one people who are just thinking about code one, the warbands, which are basically cheap guys that don't add to your order pool, they are not in code one, but they are a good piece of defensive tech because they. You don't care if they die so much.
Yes. So I think, that is another thing, that they don't have in Code 1. It changes it. So overall, what did you feel about Code 1? Did you like it?
I felt like the middle got carved out of like the middle class of units. Because responding... Because there's template weapons in the game, which are auto-hit if you respond with them. It's like using a shotgun or using just like spray and pray up close that puts down that teardrop template. You now get an auto-hit. So even if their good guy gets to you and shoots your crappy guy, if you've got one of those template weapons to fire back with, that's your best choice to respond often. Mm-hmm. So now rather than having a guy that may have some defensive tech, whether it was suppressive fire, whether he was in the link, whether it was those crappy, cheap guys who don't give you orders, with all of those gone to no longer roadblock people, your middle of the road guys are now more exposed. And whenever they hit you, if you've got those guys, you're now losing more points off the board every time you get hit.
I kind of disagree again. I don't know. It might be just the definition of what you're saying middle guys are, but... The fact that you only have 10 guys means that you don't, like, middle guys on the offense can take out heavy guys, right? It's on defense where they're significantly weaker because generally they have lower armor and less wounds, right? So I think because you only have 10 guys, and like we said, you only have 25 points, I think the medium guys are actually still decent, right? As a support piece to, let's say your heavy guy is dead, a medium guy can finish the job. Your grunts, who are generally there just to fill out your army and mostly on a defensive kind of thing, they are less able to finish the job than your middling guys. And also, what do you consider camo? The 20 point or the 2 or 3 point guys. I actually brought a bunch of 2 or 3 point guys in my list.
Yeah, so I consider camo an entirely different class of thing because it is actually, it's a big form of defensive tech that is one of the ones that still exists in Code 1. Because now, because as we said, you've got to discover the thing by making a whip option to get to the thing.
Yep.
That if they fail that, they can't attack it. So it's just more steps to be able to attack those things.
Okay, so what is your definition, though, of a middling guy? Because there are a lot of different types, right? You have camo guys, right? Camo infiltrators. Then you have guys with two wounds, but there's a difference in guys with two wounds as well, right? There's a guys with two wounds that are 2 or 3 points that are, and then there are guys with two wounds that are like 5 points, right?
It's basically guys who are like, who don't have camo and who don't have two wounds who are in that 2 to 3 point range.
There are not that many of them though.
No, they're not, but their role is much harder to find. It's hard to find a rule.
I'm just thinking about who they are. They're generally like, I'm just looking at Code One. I can only think about the heroes, mm-hmm. right? And they're good at close combat or whatever. Although, like, technically, because of how they translated the heroes, some of the heroes kind of are, because they've limited the number of rules that are in the game, the heroes are expensive but underwhelming. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's more about the fact that in the main game, they have a special rule that makes them more survivable, and they don't have that in it's literally they're the same points, but they don't have the rule that makes them like way more survivable, which is a problem. But like, if they had NWI, all the heroes, which they, I think most of the heroes actually should in the main game, I think they'd be fine.
Yeah, that's a lot of the units that had, for the people who don't play, who only play Code 1, NWI is basically like another wound. It's like having two wounds. But if you lose that wound, you're just off the board. Mm. If you lose the second wound, the guy goes right off the board. Yeah. He can't be healed. But yeah, they often, like, they kept the points for people who did have NWI. They kept the points similar, but the NWI just disappeared. So it's like they lost half their wounds and didn't get a discount.
Yeah, so to me, I think that's more of an issue about points for these characters and about the limits than the actual medium guy. Like, a lot of these guys should probably have been 1.5 points, right? Or 2 points, and then they end up being, yeah, it's like these guys that you're saying middling guys should be 1.5 or 2, but they ended up being, just because of the translation, 2 or 2.5 or even 3, right?
Yeah, and there were a lot of guys who before might have had more equipment, but because that equipment doesn't exist in Code 1, their points often stayed sort of relatively the same compared to everything else, and they didn't get discounted for the fact that they no longer have half their equipment.
So I do feel like in some ways, if they do end up rebalancing points, I think it'll be fine.
Like, yeah, I do, but those are kind of those middling guys I'm talking about for those two reasons.
But I still think they have a reason for existing, assuming their price is priced correctly. Like, basically as another attack piece, that is a backup attack piece, right?
Yep.
Which makes sense.
But before, you might have put those models closer to the front line because they had weapons to deal with lots of situations. Uh-huh. But now, and more defensive tech from the suppressive fire rule from link teams. Mm-hmm. But now you don't want those guys near your front line if they're going to be a secondary attack piece. You want them held further back so that they're not targeted. You want more of the crap trash. You want more of like the cheap guys on the front line who can respond with templates.
But at the same time, it really depends on how you're playing, right? I guess we're getting into tactics now, right? You want them as close as possible without them easily being attacked, right? Yeah, but technically that's the same thing for everyone, right?
You want them to be like maybe on a roof, so they have, if they're not being watched, they can climb down. You just want something, you don't want them accessible to your opponent, because they're worth enough points that your opponent will go after them, and they're dangerous to your opponent. So you want to keep, either you have roadblocks in front of them, or they're on roofs or something to keep them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Like, or if you're going, you want to make the rest of your army go around so that they're less likely to be hit by your opponent's strongest attack piece, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's generally fine, honestly. And a lot of, honestly, the what you called them medium? Or you call them
middle of the road guys, whatever.
Middle of the road guys. A lot of them do have templates to defend themselves against like cheap infiltrating guys who are most likely the first types to attack. And the second and third turn, you can shift basically the battle lines with, you know, depending on how you play, so that they're less likely to be just murdered. Mm-hmm. So I do think there's a role for them, but I agree that do have to be more careful, and I would say a couple of them are too expensive.
Yeah.
Especially because I think maybe it's some sort of points formula where armor is now like, I feel like armor with two wounds is now valued correctly, but like if you have half the wounds, armor is not worth as much, right?
Yep.
So that's basically it.
Yeah, I think mines also be, like I said, camo became more important. I think mines, that which do also appear in camo form, became more important because it's a way of getting more objects on
defensive,
the board.
Yeah, and more defensive tech.
Yeah, it's
one considering there's... Yep.
Plus, those cheap guys are no longer available. That before, might just run out in front of the mine and just take it in the face to clear the minefield. Now you're using like more expensive guys, and you've got fewer orders. So whoever has to go deal with the mine, it's now more of a nuisance to your opponent losing orders to go deal with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's become more. They've just become more important for whatever defensive tech is still left.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So overall, I guess, we both agree it's a great intro game and it's a great way to test out if you like Infinity. Would you feel like for other people, I guess for you, would you continue to play it? And the second thing is, do you think that for some people, this is the right game to just continue to play?
Yeah, I think that's, so your second point about it being the right game for some people, for the people who like that gameplay style, but maybe they only have normally time for video games and can only get the game in once in a while, but they really like that deep tactical, like board positioning game, that it's the game for them to play if they're only playing like once a month, once or less. Mm-hmm. And I would keep it up just for the sake of those people and for the sake of introducing other people to the game.
Mm. Okay, so for you, it's more about introducing people to the greater game. But for you, N4 is kind of the way to go. Like, it's the end goal for you and for the experience that you want with Code 1.
Yeah, just for being able to vary the armies and for just the gameplay.
So. Okay. Yeah. For me, I actually like Code 1 quite a bit. And I think it's possibly because I care more about like paring down the game, and I think that is an important part. Or I feel like Infinity just needs to get pared down, right? I think a better version of Infinity is one with less rules, but with the right, like we've mentioned throughout this thing, with the right chosen rules, not just like, and not, I guess, not paring down things based on whether you want to sell the model or not, right? That's just. Yeah. For me personally. And I like the fact they don't have links, which is awesome. And yeah, I really want to... Yeah, that's true.
They sounded like they're open to suggestions and playtesting things. So, and that they're not going to rush to create new ones because the game just is about to release new rules. So they're not going to be in a rush to change it.
Yeah, and I feel like the size of the table is totally under... I don't know... To me, it can't be undersold. Like, it is super great to me to have a 32x48 table and make the game work really, like, play like I expect an Infinity game to play. And I think the important thing, like, about Code 1 versus N4 is overall, I feel like I get basically almost everything that I get from Infinity in terms of the feeling and being able to put the units on the table. I get almost all of that feeling. And I think I gain a whole bunch of these other things where I feel like it's totally worth it. Even if like that was the only game I played, it's pretty close to the ideal version of Infinity that I would want. Right. And I don't know, like N4 hasn't come out, right? So I'm just comparing to N3, but like there is a world where I feel like I would prefer to play Code 1 over N4. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, especially because, you know, we play every week, but we play in a group where almost certainly they're all going to want to play mostly N4, right? Because they're all a bunch of veterans and things like that. And we are playing every week. So I do feel like that's going to be the future, but I do feel like if it was just up to me, I would almost consider taking Code 1 and tweaking a few things than using N4 and technically or using N4 and tweaking things. I do.
You would probably play a lot of other games though at the same time as Code 1, whereas these other players in our group are mostly exclusively playing Infinity.
That is true.
So,
right?
So for you, so like to it, me, it fit really well. And for me, like I like playing lots of different games, which involves possibly having to go to the game store multiple times a week. Mm-hmm. But I like the having that deeper game, which the full version of the game gives. And then, but the rest of the games I play, I don't want them to be anywhere near that deep.
Yeah, I would say I get the general feeling of Infinity, and it is, there is less deepness, but I do feel like there is still a lot of strategy that I feel like the way I play the game, like I generally win or lose for the same reasons I win or lose in Infinity. And I don't feel like I will max out my strategic ability in Code One to such a point where, like, I think the worlds are deep enough that you will probably not become an expert of Code One, in where you're playing against someone and the only reason either of you won is because, like, it becomes a solved game and the only reason anyone wins is because of the dice rolls. I feel like it's complicated enough that the skill or the the correct play on the table is going to matter enough that, you know, it becomes an interesting and tactile and deep thought, deep thinking game. That's just the way that I feel in general about the game.
Yeah.
But I do think that, so I did though, you know, I did mention that Suppressive Fire was something that I really miss in the main game. And we did try for the fourth game with Leo to just to add that into the game. And also allowing one person to have Suppressive Fire at the start of the game, which is something they added to the main rules, right?
Yeah, if you're the player that goes second.
Yeah, and I feel like with adding that thing in, I think Code One is probably enough for, like, to get the overall feeling. And like I did mention, there's a couple of things that I would want to port from the original game, but for the cost of the extra complication, I don't think it's necessarily needed.
Yeah, no, I would agree that Suppressive Fire rule makes it play much more similarly to the full version of the game. Without it, like, I think the tactical changes you have to make are quite large to sort of tactically play one game versus the other game.
I do feel like adding that ability to suppress means that there's more options than playing just cat and mouse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you don't reach out, take something, then you have to like pull your paw back. Otherwise you get exposed.
Yeah. So that's basically it. Overall, I'd say Code One is great. I think it's actually better than after playing it than it seemed when I read the rules.
Mm-hmm. I will build multiple armies for it just to be able to introduce players. Because the new player may want to buy an army based on its look, which may not be one of the Code One armies. So for getting other people into the game, whatever form they end up wanting to play, would want to own multiple Code One armies myself.
These two?
To demo, yeah.
So which one are you going to play?
Okay, fine. It's just going to be two. It's not going to be the ones that you like. Yes, it's going to be O12 and...
Oh, okay. Yeah, it comes in the... Yeah.
And Shazvasti. Partially because I kickstarted another dungeon crawler game from the game maker.
Same company?
That has a lot of the models.
Yeah, and okay. Like that makes sense. Yeah, I'm going to do Pano and... Yujing.
Oh, good.
I'm gonna try and get one of our other friends who's kind of bounced off Infinity before to play a little bit more and see if he likes it. But it seems like he's going the exact opposite direction, where he's like, "No, I want things even more simple and no measuring." So maybe it'll be impossible. But you know, like you said, just having two armies, and of course, all the models are great looking. So it's not too much of a loss.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we covered like some deeper parts of the game for those who already played M3 and are considering what might be going on tactically with Code One, and just newer players for the fluff, the look, and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's been super long, actually, this chat. But hopefully this has given you an insight into Code One and our thoughts on it. And if you're new to Infinity, a reason to go and start it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you have any thoughts on Code One or or questions or anything like that, you know, find us on Facebook, give us a, send us an email, any of that kind of stuff. And we'll be sure to answer you.
Yeah. Maybe not with the paragraphs it takes to talk about tactics, but anything, I think less than that.
All right. This has been Alan.
It's been Brandon.
All right. One more thing. So if you enjoyed that podcast and want to listen to more, you can find them over at diceovereverything.com or on your favorite podcast app. And if you want to leave a comment, message, or ideas for like more podcasts from us, or
just get in touch with us
at Facebook and look for Dice Over Everything there.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.